CSF Entertainment.
Yo, what up, though? Man, welcome
what up, though?
CSF Entertainment. And we are back for BMF Episode 5, The Battle of Techwood. What's going on, Jack of Jordans?
What up, though? What's going on?
Nah, man, hanging in there. Been a long week.
Yeah, it has.
We're going to go ahead and kick it off. And as usual, we have none other than Jack of Jordans. And I'm just going to go ahead and kick it off and say what you rate this episode.
I'd say about 7.5, 8. I'd say 8.
I actually gave this one a 9.
I said 8.
I mean, it was a couple of joints. I was like, that, you know, it was given because we said it in our prediction video. But some of them joints caught me way off guard. I didn't see it coming. I was like, whoa.
Can I mention how bad that 2 Chainz was acting in this in this show? Like, his acting was not good at all. I'm like, he did the baghead bounce, and even when he got shot up and did the Lorenzo thing, you know, the Lorenzo and Training Day thing, I was like, yo.
Yeah, that baghead bounce on the court. This guy's like, bro, really? And it was crazy because I was like, I could have swore that was something he did like episode 3, but I was like, he didn't. Yeah, that joint was terrible. So we're just going to go ahead and get up into it. And episode 5 synopsis, The Battle of Techwood says, Meech and Terry rediscover the black mecca of Atlanta. Both brothers learn the process of breaking into the scene in Atlanta will not be easy when they are met with the old guard who wants to retain. So episode kicks off, Meech, as we know, Terry flew down to Atlanta, and they are all up in the club. They're coming back home to party and celebrate with Loco of all the bricks and everything that they move, that Loco supplied them with. And while up in the club, you know, finally T and Loco, they finally, you know, have a little handshake and everything after the whole situation where, you know, T kind of was disrespectful at the beginning, but everything's supposed to be cool now. You know, me just like, you see how, you know, how fast we move things. I couldn't have done it without T. You know, this is my right-hand man. This is my hermano. So, you know, if you're working with me, you got to work with him, which Loco respected, you know, and they dapped up and everything's cordial now. After that, then we got Stacks that pop. Right. And then pops up in the club, and the one thing I noticed, and you'll see it throughout the review, one thing I noticed was like this first thing off of here from T meeting Stacks, like T had like this little joint, like he ain't trust him off jump.
Well, I definitely think that, man. His body language was saying don't trust me. You know, he was, are we all good now? And all of this is before T even knew the scoop, you know, before he even got with Duffy and, you know, and got the scoop on Stacks. But his body language was just off, you know, and then the bankhead bounce and the whole family, you know, it's the whole family. Like, nah, bro, like how you, nah.
Yeah, it tripped
me out. I like the way Meech kind of, yeah.
Yeah, but see, it was just like his whole joint, his whole demeanor was like, you know what I'm saying, like, who this dude or whatever. So I peeped that off jump.
Yeah.
But they go back and forth, you know, Meech act like, yeah, you know, everything cool, you know. And Stacks is like, you know, I just got upset, whatever, whatnot, ready to get back in the fold. And then Stacks alerts Meech to that Remy Ransom and Techwood crew is up in the club. I knew off gate this was the setup. Like, this was the setup where, like, it was just going to be like, I bet I'm going to get them. Because immediately he kept looking over his shoulder when he was talking to Meech. So at first I thought, like, MK's was going to come up in the club or something. But then he ends up saying, what you call it, you know.
The issue I got with this scene, and kind of part of, well, this is part of why I gave it an 8, is I get that it's Remy Ransom City, but you got to understand how your ops move. You know they stay in pure platinum. You, like, this is things that you know. So why are you not on the lookout for them just as much as you don't look out for me? And just the second fight they didn't get, this is the second fight they had in this club.
Yep.
So you already know that they're going to be there. So why the preparation even made for either one or the other to be there? Because you sure already know.
Yeah.
That's me.
I'm thinking the same way. That's why I was like, when I saw Remy Ransom in the joint, I was wondering, I was like, yo, like, is that something with, like, Stack set it up for Remy Ransom to be in there? Or he just happened to be up in there? Like I said, he kept looking over his shoulder, so I was wondering if that was something that Stacks had set up to make sure, like, Remy Ransom was there so that Misha could see him, and they go off, you know what I'm saying, just tee off on Remy Ransom and his crew, and that would make the whole fake war start so that Stacks and Glock and all them to take it out or whatever, take them out.
Could be. We ain't never know.
Yeah, that's possibly what it could be. But after Stacks alerts Meech and T to mainly Meech, Remy Ransom sent up in the club. They go off, jump Remy Ransom and his whole crew and whatnot. And they fight. You know, they get thrown out of the club. So then after all of that has unfolded, you know, T and Meech, they leave the Platinum Palace. And they end up coming outside. Everybody's like, yo, we're going to meet up at Duffy's crib. And during that whole process, I forgot the boxer's name in this scene.
Mac Attack.
I feel like, and I could be wrong, I feel like this is Mike, but I could be wrong.
See, so I didn't even look at it like that. Because, so what I did was, because there's an actual boxer named Mac Attack, but the timeline doesn't make sense because the actual Mac Attack is almost my age. So I'm like, the timeline really doesn't make sense. So I typed in Mac Attack the boxer. So I never really thought about it, saying that, oh, this could be, it probably is Tyson. The only reason
that made me think it was Tyson was because Tyson was the only boxer I knew to drive around the world's works.
Yeah, he was the only boxer that was getting this type of money.
Yeah, so that's what made me think, you know, this was Mike. Because, like, he was like, yo, you know what I'm saying? Both of them see it's a Rolls Royce and everything.
Yeah, you see that?
So that's what made me think, because I vividly remember Mike was the only one that was driving around in a Rolls Royce. Now, the question is, I just can't remember if he was out of jail during this time, and I don't think he was.
Because I think, was it
92, 93? I don't think he was, because I don't remember him coming back to, like, maybe, like, 95 to fight.
I gotta check the timeline.
Yeah,
I gotta check the timeline. But I didn't even think that this was Tyson. I just was kind of like, oh, Mac Attack, let me see if this is a real boxer. But now that you mention it, it probably was.
Yeah, it's probably a mixture of both. Mm-hmm. Probably a mixture of both. But they go and dap him up, and Mac Attack shows them, you know, his Rolls Royce and everything, and what they call it in YouTube universe, the Easter egg. Here, as soon as I saw this, I was like, okay, this is the Easter
egg. You already.
I was like, where Meech and all them, they had the little secret component spots up in their limos when they was moving the weight up and down the highways as they got later on into the 2000s. So I was like,
okay. quick little backstory, just in case people don't know. I think his name was Jabari, mm-hmm. I'm not mistaken. He was the driver. You guys should go on YouTube. He got a documentary on YouTube. He was the driver for them, and they would pay $70,000 for the limo or for his luxury RV, then pay an additional $90,000 to $100,000 to get this type of equipment put in there that was sealed tight, airtight, so the dogs couldn't smell them. Quick little backstory, true, all facts.
Yep, along with another little Easter egg joint that I realized was when Mac Attack tells them that the guy's in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh, okay. So I was like, that's another little Easter egg or whatever. So I was like, that's probably exactly where. So it kind of lines up the timeline. But like you said, we see this is his quote-unquote safes. We got his little jewelry and everything up inside the car. And while he's showing them this, you know, shots rang out. And they realized that Diesel gets hit. And immediately, of course, you know, they think it was Remy Ransom. And
I did, too.
I didn't think it was him.
I ain't gonna lie.
I didn't think it was him. I didn't think it was them only because of the way Stacks kept setting, you know what I'm saying? Like I said, the way he was saying, he kept looking. I was like, nah. I said, yo, this probably got Stacks in it written all over it. So, you know, Diesel gets unalive. He gets taken out. They all meet back at Duffy crib. And this is how I really knew, because Stacks was on
this one. I knew.
He was on the whole, like, we about to go to war. He was vocal. He was trying to be like the lieutenant. You know what I'm saying? He the captain.
Here's my thing with Stacks. If you already knew who did what before Meech even got there, why didn't you move on that before Meech even got there?
Because you weren't thinking.
Like, you had opportunity to go ahead and make the move. Like, so you not... And this was your crew before Meech even got there. Mm-hmm. But that's just me.
Yeah, nah, he wasn't thinking. He was still small time, so he wasn't looking at it as a bigger aspect.
Mm-hmm.
Small time, so all only thing he was focused and centered on was just getting Meech out of the way. He just wanted mm-hmm. him out of the way because he just felt he was salty because, for one, he ended up taking his soldiers. You know what I'm saying? When he pawned the whole Rolex and everything. And then two, he felt like, you know, Meech was BS anyway because he still ain't go back and hit Remy and them for the whole Ty Washington situation. So, you know what I'm saying? Stacks wasn't thinking. He just wanted them just gone. So that's pretty much all it was. He just had the whole revenge thing on his whole mind. Like, he was just being a hater in a sense. So
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, so Stacks, you know, he tries to rally up the troops and like, yeah, we're going to go to war. You know what I'm saying? Let's hit them, you know, at they spot and everything. Like, yeah, I'm with you. I'm riding with you. We're going to take them out.
I got a little shorty to stick me in at night. Yep. You know what I'm saying? Got a little dark area over there.
Yep.
Where the lights is out.
Yep. So right then and there, I was like, okay, I see what type of time Stacks is on, but... Everybody was with it except for T. You know, T come, they go back to the crib, and T is like, yo, you said Atlanta is all love. When I come down here, like, and you about to go to war, and he's not even your peoples. And, you know, Meech had to let him know, like, yo, like, still, like, at the end of the day, the B and the M, you know what I'm saying? Like, the BMF, the F, and BMF stands for family. Like, this is family. So, of course, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm about to ride with him. Like, you know what I'm saying? Regardless, we still got to set up shop. You know what I'm saying? That's Ty's crew, but that's still family. So, you know, T automatically was just like, yo, I'm not with it. I'm, you know, like, you told me it's supposed to be love down here. It's supposed to be partying. I done come down here on my first day. We automatically already about to get ready to end up going in the war. So, Meech and T, they have that whole conversation. Here's the part I didn't get about this whole scene right here. So, y'all supposed to be guarding the hood, whatever. Y'all protecting the hood, whatnot. And y'all got lookouts on the roof and the windows, etc., whatever. How nobody in your crew, I don't care, like, granted, they got hoodies and sunglasses on. That even make them more conspicuous. I mean, that makes it even more obvious.
No tent on the window, no nothing.
No tent.
There's fishbowl in it.
That makes it even more suspicious that y'all see three people riding through in a black Monte Carlo and they driving slow.
Mm-hmm.
And you see three people and nobody at no given time. All these lookouts ain't saying.
Part of the reason I gave it an 8.
I was sitting there, because I was thinking like, oh, somebody probably trying to fake pop off real quick. And that's how we about to get the whole thing, you know, stack seven. But and they just rolled through like it was sweet. And I was sitting there like, yo, y'all got.
I mean, especially if the hood is so tight where you would see a car and you're like, wait a minute, I never seen that car through here before. Like, what is this? You know, we talk about the projects. So if you saw a car, like people knew, they'd be like, oh, that's such and such right there. Then he good. Let him, you know, let him through. He's straight. Oh, he going over to see, you know, this round away. It was round away thing. This exactly. Right here just says, let one go off at the car.
Yeah, and I'm just like, yo, I'm like, it's three dudes. They all got hoodies on and glasses in there. Yeah. No point to anybody to figure out. Think and say, oh, yo, they mad suspicious.
Yeah, we ain't doing that.
Yeah, this part killed me.
Right, it seemed like you could spot stacks from anywhere. That's the crazy thing. Like, if anybody, exactly. You could spot stacks from anywhere because he got that big old fro and he ain't got no hoodie on. He just riding around. Pro. He just said that his shorty had to sneak him in and you just riding around like it's all love. He said the snorty shit was sneaking in and out at night. This is a broad daylight. You got no hoodie on. Part of the reason I gave it an 8.
Yeah, I can't even see shorty sneaking him in at night, at least not with that car.
Monte Carlo with the gold BBSs.
Yeah, easy. Like, you don't want to know.
Easy. But,
so they slide through Tech Wood, and this is where they, you know, they just like, oh, okay, yeah, we get through. Stack says, you know, I got shorty that's going to help us get in. And they automatically just peep in the scene. They're set up to run up in Tech Wood to take out Remy Ransom and everybody for it, what they think is the hit on Diesel. So we back here in Detroit, and we got our man. And if you watched our prediction video, we told y'all off the jump of what this whole scene was about. So Raw Dog Charles ends up calling Sister Riley to come in, meet him at a diner, and he has been working on a song, and he wants Sister Riley and the band to record the music so that he can present it to Lucille. And of course, Sister Riley's like, yeah, you know, I can get the band, everything, we can make sure it get recorded. Sister Riley also tells Charles, like, you know, the band and the choir hasn't been the same since you guys have left the church and everything. And, you know, he tells me, you know, we decided to move to, you know, a smaller church with everything that's going on. And so while they're in there, you know, just talking and catching up, we got Lucille's cousin Estelle that sees them in the little diner and, like, quote unquote, and she says, holding hands, and everything was sweet. I knew this was going to happen. And like I said, if y'all watched our prediction videos, we told y'all this, like, we be on point. We be like 95% right and 5% wrong most of the time with these prediction joints. And that's literally what ends up happening. As
she was already lobbying for her to get her back cracked by the doctor anyway. And this was just kind of like, all right, you should definitely go ahead and get your back cracked by the doctor.
Yeah, that's all that was.
Road Dog Charles is out here wilding.
Charles, yeah.
Road Dog Charles.
When she saw Charles, that was it. Yeah, she was off the straight. Like, the way you still say Charles, it trips me out every time I hear it say that. But
yeah, Charles.
Yeah. So as we see, we got Detective Brian, who was locked up, and Detective Brian ends up getting bailed out. So we end up finding out that it was Henrietta and their crew that ends up bailing him out. Go ahead.
Another part of the reason why I gave this an 8. How do you not know that this was going to go in this direction with this dude sitting behind you?
I didn't get that either.
Like, anybody know, especially a cop, would know if a guy is sitting behind me, directly behind me, I'm like, dude, you got to sit on the driver's side behind him or something. You can't sit behind me, especially knowing the type of temper that Ren King got. Like, we ain't, like, come on.
We about to swap seats or something.
Yeah, come on. Yeah. Like, I didn't think he was about to get ready to try to give him a little $150. I thought he was just go ahead and just, you know, get the blicky and, you know, take care of it like that. But come on, Bryant.
But the other thing I would have thought was that when Ranking found out that he was locked up, would have been like, oh, you know what? That's why he didn't report back with information, because he ended up getting locked up.
But she did. I knew that wasn't going to happen because she didn't want him no way.
Yeah, she did.
She needed, all she needed was a reason. And that was reason enough.
And this was that reason.
Mm-hmm.
So we got Ranking's cousin, you know, with Detective Brian, and they got a goon in the back as they taking him to Henrietta. And I remember I think it's Dave Tyson says to him, you know, like, Henrietta think you've been holding out on her and everything, like you ain't been keeping it up, you know, up front with her and whatnot. So Brian, of course, immediately he peeps the scene, which is like, you know, hey, you know, can I smoke a cigarette? And he ends up pushing the cigarette lighter and so he could fake, quote unquote, smoke a cigarette. And during that time is when, you know, Tyson gives him the head nod, and the goon in the back tries to take Detective Brian out with a little pocket knife is what I looked at. I was like, that little joint ain't gonna do nothing. And Detective Brian, you know, ends up grabbing the cigarette lighter and burns him, you know, and ends up fighting both of them. And during the whole fight, the knife gets dropped, and Detective Brian ends up getting the knife and ends up stabbing the guy in the back. I thought where he stabbed him at, I thought he took him out. I ain't think
me
he
too.
So I was shocked to see that he survived. So after that whole fight, you know, Detective Brian hops out the car, does his little stop, drop, and roll, and then he runs off.
That sprint was hilarious.
Yo, that sprint was hilarious, because it was one of those joints I was like, bro, if dude would have just stopped the car, you would have been SOL, because you weren't going.
Yes, but you would have been caught, my boy.
You would have been caught. Like, it was like he wasn't even like this. He was just, well, them joints, like, yeah, that joint was hilarious. So they pop up to the warehouse where Ranking is at, and Ranking looks in the car to see Detective Brian. And they're telling her, you know, Detective Brian, he got away, which pisses her off. And so after that, she ends up, and I don't think they even said his name, but she challenges old boy that was in the back that was supposed to take him out.
I ain't gonna lie, I would have worked her.
Right. But here's two things. This is how I knew she was crazy. Was when she said, oh, okay, you know, let's make it an even playing field. And she cut her stuff. And I was thinking, like, damn, shorty, like, really?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm talking about, she just cut that joint like it was nothing. And I was just like, at the same time, it's still different. Dude and got stabbed. You just cut yourself. But
absolutely.
Even still, I'm with you. I was like, bro.
You want to behave as such, you want to get treated as such. I would have worked her, not even gonna lie.
I said to myself, dude must don't fight on a regular basis, because there is no way with testosterone in his body that he shouldn't have been able to just grab shorty up and just toss her.
Bro, he was like, I ain't want to fight. Listen. I've seen Harlem Nights. He didn't want to fight either. After that first punch, he was like, oh, you want to fight? You want to fight? Exactly. It's game time. We ain't doing that.
Yeah. I felt it, though. He was like, man, I ain't fighting no girl. And then I was just like, bro, like, it's like the third joint. Now after that, bro, like, all right, that all best is off.
After the first one, it was game time.
I would have been like, all right, let's square up.
Yeah, it would be all right. Okay, I see what you do.
Of course, you mess up and push her back, like you try and choke her. During that whole time where you got your left hand on it, that's when you're supposed to just be giving her body shots.
Yeah, but see, I knew he was done for, because I ain't never see her put the blade back in. And I was like, oh yeah, he about to be unalive. He done. Like the moment she get over towards that way, she done, because there's no way that she was going to overpower him. She already knew what she was doing.
Yeah. because she was already reaching for it, which she ended up getting the blade and pokes him. I don't care, I remember how many times, and it ends
about eight times.
It ends up taking him out, and of course, he's gone. He's finito, so we won't see him on the next episode. So here, back at the police station, we got Jen and Amberson, and Amberson lets Jen know that the can't remember his name off the tip of my tongue, but the guy who purchased the ambulance, he basically sung like a canary and told all of everything, and you know,
some dude named Henry.
Yep, who he bought the ambulance for, why he bought it, and said, you know, I bought it for Henry, and they automatically think it's a guy. So now they are on the whole investigation to try to figure out exactly who Henry is, as, and this is why Blaze hasn't turned the family over to Henry, because Blaze been keeping a low profile on his whole organization this entire time, and now that Henry's in the fold and trying to, you know, be out front, look what's happening. Automatically, she already about to get jammed up. And so, of course, I'm pretty sure probably later in later episodes, Blaze is probably going to have to cover this up or try to cover this up, as, you know, Henry is out there wilding and it's going to come back him on their organization or whatnot.
She moves too much off her emotions, too.
Yep, another one. Move too much off the emotions. So we got Rip up here in Duffy's studio. He's listening to a song, you know, that he recorded and made and whatnot. And while they're there, you know, Meech stops through and he gives it to Meech and says, you know, make sure. And this is where I knew his fate was sealed, that he was going to be gone, because he tells Meech, you know, like, when I'm not here, you know, make sure like the world hear this. And Meech is like, nah, man, we're going to make sure the world hear this now while you're here. Like, you done in the crew, like, you still ride with us, but like anything other than that, you know what I'm saying? Like, you can just do the music side. This is how I knew right here in this episode. I was like, oh yeah, Rip gone. I was like, it's a wrap for him. I was like, I don't know how he getting unalive, but it's a wrap for him.
First of all, that song, I've been singing that song all day. Too many holes. Too many holes. I've been singing this song all day. When I first heard it, I was at work and I was dying laughing. I was like, yo, this song, he was rapping about Let Me Be a Daddy. Then when the hook dropped, I was like, listen, at first I would have thought it was something like, if they was in Miami, I'd be like, all right, maybe this is supposed to be Luke or something. I don't know. But this was hilarious. Too many hoes.
Yeah, during that time, that was all, that was bass. You know, that South bass. That was popular around that time. But now this joint probably going to be stuck in my head the rest of this episode.
I mean, too many hoes. That is around that time, because Detroit was techno, but this is, that is around that time.
So, probably have to try to get through this, but Meech tells him, you know, like, nah, we're going to put this joint out, you know what I'm saying, like, you're not in the crew, you in the crew, but you're not going to be out busy in the streets And during that time, Duffy and T pop up, just coming from the gun range, and Duffy, you know, tells that T, even though he got a bad eye, he still is a good shot. And during this time, this is where T tells Meek, like, yo, Duffy told me the whole situation with Stacks. And like, yo, you know what I'm saying? Like, you got to keep an eye out on Stacks, because he wasn't there at the gun range. And y'all already had, you know what I'm saying, like, not beef, but like, you know what I'm saying, y'all had a falling out, which his whole, like, which he kind of brought up was like the whole B Mickey situation.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I was just kind of like, okay. I was like, T on point. At first, when Meek said, like, yo, I got everything all good to go. Like, I'm the big brother. And I was thinking, like, man, you ain't got nothing going on. I'm like, T the one that's like.
I actually thought that he was kind of like, when he said, I'm 10 steps ahead of you, I kind of figured he had a tail on Stacks. But I kind of figured he had a tail on Stacks when he said, oh, I'm already 10 steps ahead of you. I'm already watching him.
I figured he was just saying that just to say that, just to show T, like, you know, I'm the older brother, and you know, I got everything moving. I ain't really think, you know what I'm saying? That's what it was. But of course, we ended up finding out that's what it was. So here back in Detroit, we got Mama Lucille and Pastor Fleming. And Pastor Fleming offers Lucille to be a co-pastor for them, for her in their church, as, you know, Lucille has been, you know, just kind of helping out any and every way possible without being asked. You know, she opened a fake sale. She ended up getting that large donation from Dr. Maurice and all this other thing. So, she, you know, she tells Lucille, like, I would love for you to be, like, you know, co-pastor in my church. We can't pay you, you know, as much money as you're making at the Wendy's, but we can still pay you some. So,
how much money was she making at Wendy's?
Hey,
that was my question. How much money is she really making at Wendy's? We talking 1992. We ain't talking about 2022. Wendy's is making $18 an hour. We talking about 1992.
Yo,
what was minimum wage then? $3?
When she said that, excuse me, when she said that, that was the first thing that came to my mind. She was like, we can't pay you like Wendy's. I'm like, well, damn. Like, I mean, I get it. You know, y'all a super smaller church than the ones, you know, y'all was at before, but I'm like, what y'all paying her, like $2 an hour or something? Like, is that she not gonna make as much as she would at
Wendy's? I'm gonna look up the minimum wage for 1992.
Cause I was like, yo, that's crazy. I was like, and this is supposed to be like a part-time pastor thing going on. I was like, you talking about we can't pay you as much as that? But yeah, so she tells Lucille, and Lucille just says her, you know, let me pray on it and whatnot, and I'll make my decision then. Now, you're going to have to help me out on this one, because I didn't understand this entire scene. I didn't even understand what was the purpose of it. So, Angel brings Meech back to the club where she, I guess she just rents it. Yeah, she rents it all out just for them two. And she ends up turning on music and giving him a dance and whatnot. And, you know, they have this whole heart-to-heart. My whole thing is, what was the significance of this?
I don't think it was no significance at all, really. I think she just was trying to... It was no significance to the show whatsoever. She just was trying to, I don't know, give Meech a different type of attention. I mean, she could have did all that, you know, back in at his crib. Side note, minimum wage is $3.35 in 1992 in Michigan.
So I guess I was right with $2 or something.
Yeah, like, you probably was right. It was $3.
It was $3.35. I kind of felt like I'm all right with $2.
I'm like, what was they paying?
Yeah.
Honestly, this showed us absolutely nothing.
Nothing.
This was just a slide-in scene. No pun intended. This was just... I guess her trying to show him personal attention. Because we ain't learned nothing on this part.
Yeah, I was lost. I was like, yo, why you bring him to the club? And I was like, you could have did this, like, at the crib, whatever. And then I was also lost because I'm like, yo, are y'all saying now that, like, Meech done took over the club and just kicked Greeny out?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's the situation? Because this is supposedly Greeny's club. So I'm like...
So let me ask you something. Is it actually Greeny's club, or is it Greeny's girls that's in the club?
Because
I thought his club was the other one. And he's just like, if you want to go over to, let's go over to, you know, the Platinum Palace or whatever. And I thought that his girl, Angel, just worked there. That's why he was over there, you know, drinking. He here with the, you know, whatever. But I didn't think that that was his, I didn't think that was his club. I thought that that was just, you know, he was just running some game over there.
I mean, you might be right, but it was just every time we saw him, he was always coming out the back or whatnot. So, you know what?
I mean, his girl the headliner, though, so that's why I just thought he was just...
Yeah, maybe that, you know what? Maybe that is, maybe that's not...
Because in the other scene, when he first introduced him, you saw him in there breaking down numbers and stuff like that. Why Greeny wouldn't be back in his club? But why Meech was still, you know, just be popping up at Pure Palace if it was his joint, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's the way I look at it. Because at first I was thinking the exact same thing, but I'm like, why would Meech come back? To me, that doesn't make any sense unless that's not really Greeny's club. That's just his girl just worked there.
You might be right. And that's probably why I remember in the last episode, we were trying to figure out why Meech was even sending her back to the club. So, yeah, so this might not be even be Greeny's club. You know what?
Yeah.
I didn't even think about that. But yeah, that whole scene served no purpose.
Estelle was wilding.
So, cousin Estelle comes over to the crib.
He was bugging.
Automatically. And tells Lucille, like, hey, we got to get Charles' clothes where he at. We got to get his clothes. Charles. We're going to put him out. You know what I'm saying? What
are you? Man,
I saw him at the restaurant yesterday holding hands with some chick. My whole thing with this whole joint was, I was like, okay, first of all, why you wait a whole day? Why you ain't hit?
She said that she was like, I didn't want to take the scab off of old wounds or something, or whatever she said. But come on, Estelle, come on now. Who you? Sure. You ain't that type. I know your type, Estelle. You making that phone call as soon as you get to the crib. You had a car phone at the time. As soon as you get to the car, you was making that phone call. You probably had to go to the grocery store before you even did anything else. You was going straight home and making that phone call. Stop playing with me, Estelle.
Exactly. I was lost by that. She was like, I saw it yesterday. I was like, you ain't make a call? I was like, yeah. Or I was like, now all of a sudden, now you coming over to...
And you want to pack this stuff up and all the type of... Come on, Estelle. Just say that you rooting for her to get her back cracked by Maurice.
That's all it was.
Because you want to live, through her back cracking.
That's all it was.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, you just like, now you can move forward with Dr. Maurice and you ain't got to worry about him and we kick him out. And I was just like, damn. I was like, yeah, that's all you worry about. You just want her.
Exactly. And I think you just want her to tell you about the back cracking because you ain't getting your back cracked by Dr. Maurice still. I'm watching you. I'm watching you still.
After this whole ordeal, you know, Lucille thinks, you know, once again, that like, yep, Charles is out there. He out there, raw dog. Charles is out there in the streets again, cheating, and she feels stupid.
Raw dog.
This thing was hilarious that she held a whole bat in her hand.
Yo, I was like, why she got the bat? You should call me Crazy Joe. I didn't call me Batman.
Man. When she had the bat, I was for sure like, as soon as he walked through the door, she about to crack him. And then that's when it hit me when I looking and saying all his stuff is at the door. So that's why I was just like, she probably just using that. They're like, nah, you going to take all your stuff, get out the car.
Oh, quick little backstory, quick little nugget. So it wasn't the fact that their beef came in because in real life, realistically, is because he worked at Chrysler. Now, Chrysler was the big three, was the reason why people moved to Detroit anyway, because of the money that the big three was making. I was always asking, like, if he's working at Chrysler or GM or wherever he was working at, why he ain't never got no money? How he can't support you move here for that, right? Mm-hmm. The real Lucille said is that he had a collection of expensive guitars. Mm. And that's why he never had no money. He couldn't stop with the music part of it, and he invested so much into it. And that's why they were so broke all the time.
That makes sense. That makes a whole lot of sense. That makes so much sense. Cause we see like, what is it? 1, 2, 3. So yeah, we see a whole bunch of equipment. That's probably why he can never get through with fixing the crib.
Yep, he bought a lot of guitars. He bought a lot of equipment for this studio that he was trying to get off the ground. And yeah, it just never made no money.
So Charles tells himself, like, you know, I was with Sister Riley, when she's like, oh, you with Sister Riley again? And he's like, you know, no, I got the band to make this song that I've been working on for you and whatnot. And he ends up putting it in there and just grabs the guitar.
Listen.
He goes to paint auto-tune.
I didn't see it coming. Oh, he went from Raw Dog Charles to Uncle Charles. Oh, man.
When I thought I thought the character was gonna have I thought they was gonna let him use like his actual voice thing. So I was waiting for it, and then when it didn't happen, I said, "Oh man, they don't. That's probably him." And they just added some auto tune to it or something.
Artificial intelligence is something crazy too.
I was like, because the way he's singing on the episode, I was like, it's not matching what we're hearing in the background.
Right.
I was like, it's not matching what we're hearing in the background at all. So he sings this whole song for Lucille, and of course she folds. She breaks down.
It did something for her.
Yeah, which we all knew was about to happen. And I was just like, really, Lucille? I was like, that's all it took? I was like, how you know he not telling you? He just making that up. Like, hey.
Crack back Lucille, man. I gave like, her a name. Crack back Lucille. Lucille
trying to get back. Song just cause, or making the song just cause. I was like, but automatically, which, you know, she loves Charles. So she loves Rondell Charles. And, like, of course, they ended up making up and they end up going upstairs and whatnot. So here we back in Atlanta, and we got Meech and Angel, and Meech is showing Angel a whole vision board, which was crazy to me because I had never even heard of a vision board until maybe about like what, 10 years ago?
I was about to say I heard a vision board probably about like 2010 or something.
Yeah, it was in the 2000s, and all of a sudden it's the whole vision board, and he like, yeah, this is what all the stuff that I want and all the stuff I'm gonna get, and make sure, like, you know, this is what my family and everybody around me, that what they gonna have, because this is what I want. And we end up getting Tina comes in the crib, and she tells T and Meech that, like, hey, you know what, you was right. Stax is trying to set y'all up. You know, some of the OGs have been telling me that Stax been running around with Glock, which, you know, Meech had already suspected. And that's what T found out, like, yeah, okay, you know, Meech is on top of his game and whatnot. And at this point, Meech is like, you know what I'm saying, I gotta come up with a plan so that we can end up, you know, we gonna take him out. And that's when he comes up with the whole plan, like, yo, we don't have them in the daytime. Yeah, that's right. This is the same. Yeah, he was like, yeah, we're going to hit him in the daytime.
Mm-hmm.
No, matter of fact, this is not what he said, we're going to hit him in the daytime. This is when he comes up with a joint where, because he goes back to Duffy Cribs, and he tells them that, like, yo, we're going to go up to Techwood, and we're going to try to link up with Remy Ransom and them to take out Glock and them. You know what I'm saying? Like, he still got to pay for Ty Washington, but right now we need him to end up taking out Glock. And Duffy, you know, like, man, you know, forget Stax, but everybody with him.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Everybody with him. Everybody ready to ride. Everybody dap up, so it's all good. And that's the plan that they go.
This further sealed the deal for Rip for me.
Yeah. When Rip gave him the dap, I was just like, damn, dog. I was like, man, Rip.
I was like, yeah, he ain't coming back.
I was like, man, Rip been a good dude, but his time was up. So we got Detective Bryant. Man, this whole scene, we knew it was coming, but we ain't know it was coming like this, though.
Yeah, man, this was bad.
It was bad. And it's crazy because when I saw the beginning of the joint, and you know how they get like the little the ratings of the episode, I looked at it. But like, I ain't pay attention to it. It wasn't until this scene that I said, yeah, I remember seeing the rates. I said, yo, I was like, really? I said, so Kevin, Detective Brown visits Kevin. As you see, Kevin all beat up, and he tells Pops, you know, after Pops asking, you know, like, what's going on? He's like, yo, the people that were protecting me, you know what I'm saying? They start jumping. And they did some other things and whatnot. And Detective Bryant immediately is like, what? So my whole thing, I was like, yo, like, okay, if this is going on, like, why they ain't moved this boy to PC yet? I was like, I know it's not jail, quote unquote. Like, it's, you know what I'm saying? It's like,
I got a question. I got an even better question. If you knew this was going on, like, if you can't get in touch with the supervisor, you go to the manager. The manager is Blaze. The supervisor is Henry.
Yeah.
Why didn't you like, you initially went to Blaze to work things out. Why didn't you go to Blaze to make sure everything was in order for your kid? Why still didn't even deal with Henry? Like, you should have just went straight to Blaze and be like, listen, me and Henry, after the first encounter, I don't really see this relationship working to the point where she would provide the protection for my kid. I need you to get in front of this and let me know what you need me to do in order for you to get in front of this, because she's not going to obviously do it. Or at least not do it to the point where there's a complete understanding. I just would have went straight to Blaze.
Yeah,
once he got out, he should have went to Blaze.
I would just would have thought, like, yo, with him, and I get it, you know what I'm saying, like, he's suspended or whatever, but just him being a cop's child, like, they would have put that boy in protective custody. Like, they would have put him in PC somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, probably not locked down like that, probably not 23-1, but just somewhere where, like, he's not in gym pop, where he can get touched or he can get beat up and whatnot. Like, that, like, it was just crazy. I was thinking, like, yo, why is he even still even able to get touched like this? I get it. Henrietta had them watching him, but I'm like, yo, he shouldn't even be in gym pop.
Like, we saw the writing on the wall with him in season two. Season before.
Juvenile detention center, but at least I know they got a PC in juvenile detention center. I'm like, that's where that little boy should have been. Like, everybody can see that little boy, he wasn't even built.
He's fragile. He wasn't built for that.
Yeah, that man was in the comics and everything else. Like, so, but we knew from the, well, at least I knew from this scene right here, I knew what was going on with Kevin and literally what was about to happen to Kevin and what was going to be the end on this episode.
Yeah, we predicted that
last week. Yeah, we said
like,
this.
Yeah, we said
like, this episode.
I saw the writing on the wall last season for him. Like saying like, it's not looking good.
Now, I didn't think it was going to be in the manner it was.
Me either.
But we saw.
It was sad, to be honest. Like, I knew it was coming, but it was still one of those things that's still sad, even though it's a show.
Yeah, that joint, like I said, it wasn't until that scene right there where I realized the ratings they had. And then I was just like, bro, I don't even want to see the end now, because I was like, I know what's about to happen, little homie. I don't even want to see the end now, but I knew, like I said, we said last week.
Yo, shout out to this Benz having the windshield wipers on the headlights, bro.
You want to know something crazy? I'm not going to say plenty of people, but I've known at least maybe 5 or 6 people. Like, and this is not like now, like even back then, who had the, not this one, but the four-door, which was the S500.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, around that time. They had the wipers on them. I've never seen one where the wipers move. Never.
So, I may have not had a relative that had a Ford car. It wasn't this. You know, back then, it was a Volvo that had the windshield wipers on the headlights. I only saw them once. And it was by accident because I was in the car messing around and I turned them on by accident. And we didn't know I turned them off.
I've never, ever seen not one where the wipers on the headlights move. I even have a cousin. Matter of fact, and I forgot all about that. My uncle. But this might not have been around the same area, but I want to say, 95, 96? He had an E-Class. I think it was maybe an E320 or something like that. I just remember it was birth me. Matter of fact, It was similar to the one that Meech had in the first season. Similar to that one. It was around that time. He had a burgundy one, and he had the wipers on the headlights, and I never saw them joints move. So I just wonder if they actually did move at some point, or if they were just there for like decoration. Like, I'm still to this day, but.
Yeah, the ones in the Volvo moving. I was like, what is it for?
Hey. I'm going to probably have to Google it, YouTube, to see if they actually did move at some point. But we got T and Meech coming in, SL. I think it was the SL500 coming through in Techwood. You know what I'm saying? They got the top down. At the same time, I was like, damn, y'all trying to come through the joint stunting? Like, y'all coming through with the top down? Like,
always Meech.
You know what I'm saying? The show. And we see Stax, the
quote, little shorty.
Little shorty that been sneaking him into Techwood. And she ends up calling Stax immediately. It was just like, yo, you know, they here up here in Techwood. BMF mentioned them. It's about to get ready to go down and whatnot, which we know that Stax ends up calling Glock and all of them so they can end up coming through. So they all roll up and they come into Remy Ransom's crew. And this is where Meech tells him, like, hey, man, Glock and them trying to set us up. They coming through to take us all out. We need to join up. You know what I'm saying? And take them out. You know what I'm saying? Then we can get back to beef later on. Like, they, you know what I'm saying? They about to get ready, air it out. And Remy Ransom, like, you know, man, we about to defend our hood. You know what I'm saying? We've been defending it. And that's, it is what it is. Beast tells him, like, yo, they coming through a high military grade. Like, they about to tear this whole joint down. We need to join together. And Claude was a smart one and was just like, he got a point. Like, yo, like, he, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're coming through with some military grade type assault rifles.
They're coming through. They got choppers.
You know what I'm saying? They got the choppers. And I saw Remy's face was just like, oh, like, bro, you turning on me. But as we can see, Claude was right. Like, yo, he got a whole point. Like, we ain't got these type of straps. Like, you know what I'm saying? We got little machine guns and some pistols.
Egos getting in the way.
They coming through, like you said, whole choppers.
Mm-hmm.
So we got Detective Jen and Amberson. They back at the station and they're discussing again the whole case and whatnot. And this is where Amberson tells Jen, you know, like, she's been avoiding Pops because Pops is trying to use her as a prop since she's in law enforcement now for his reelection and whatnot. And they continue the case even more. And Amberson wants to find out the whole ambulance person, you know, ambulance driver, you know, from that night where Jen got shot. And that's what Jen says, you know, like, hey, you know, let's have a talk, but not here. And they end up going back to Jen's crib to discuss the whole case. And she ends up letting her know, like, you know, hey, it was Detective Bryant was the one that was in the ambulance with that night, you know, running Henry's product, and that's why Hoop and Cuts ended up, you know, running up on the ambulance or whatnot, and that Detective Bryant came by the restaurant to check on her because he was the one who unalived the guy who tried to end up taking her out. So then that's when Amberson says, you know, hey, you know, it's all good, just don't ever keep me in the dark. You know, let me know exactly what's going on going forward. You know, we a whole partner, you know, and all this other stuff. And that's when they get into this whole karaoke thing. You know, Jen's like, yeah, we can do this, but we got to drink some more. And I'm sitting there watching. I'm like, man, y'all about to go through a whole bunch of Miller Lights just to get drunk.
Man, they about to go through 2 24-packs. In order to get drunk off of Miller Lite.
Yeah, I was like, y'all drinking water right now. Y'all about to be
exactly
drinking for a minute.
Miller Lite's disgusting.
Yeah. So they end up putting on a song that Jen and her sister used to sing doing karaoke. So they having a whole karaoke session. And it was crazy because before the karaoke joint, if y'all watched this last week, we had been discussing the whole writing on the wall between Jen and Amberson hooking up or whatever. So I thought that's what we were about to get ready to get before.
Mm-hmm. I did too.
Especially like when they got close, I was like, yeah, here it come. But then mm-hmm. they end up sitting up here singing, I don't even know what song, but they're having a whole karaoke session singing
it. It wasn't too many hoes.
We don't have a song. Oh, while they having that, Detective Brian stops through up to Jen's crib, and he says, you know, like, hey, I need your help. You know, this has to do with Kevin, so I need you to do me a huge favor and whatnot. And that's when, you know, Amerson's like, you know, we shouldn't help you. You know, we should end up turning you in and whatnot, you know, for you running stuff with, you know, with Henrietta. And Brian tells Jen, like, I'll tell you everything, but I need you to help me first. Mm-hmm. You know, with the whole situation with Kevin and everything. And while that's going on, shots rang out. And we know it was none other than Henrietta and her cousin Tyson that come through, slide through in the Roadmaster. And they just airing out Jen's apartment. And in the process, Amerson gets hit. I did not see
that. I thought Jim was going to get hit. I actually thought Jim was going to get hit. I thought he was going to be done for. I didn't see this coming.
I didn't see this coming. Mm-hmm. When I saw this, I said, dang. I said, yo, what? I was like, yo, I did not see this coming. So I don't know if she's even going to survive. Like, they never showed it. But I was like, the way she breathed. And I was like,
oh, she's done.
I was like, she ain't going to make it. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Look like about 5.
Yeah. Right. She's done.
Like, center mass. But I definitely did not see Amerson being the one.
Stripes and 21 gun salute. She dope.
I was for sure it was going to be Jen, especially the way the shots
were. I thought it was going to be Jen for sure.
I thought it was going to be Jen for sure.
I knew it was going to be Jen.
I should know because we never saw Amerson fire back. What'd you say, Jack?
I knew it wasn't going to be Detective Bryant, but I knew for sure that it was going to be Jen. And if I would have, like, in my head, I was like, all right, it's going to be Jen. It's going to be too much for Amberson. It's going to be the second gunfight that she got into, you know, whatever. So she's going to say, I'm out. I don't want to do the street stuff no more or something. But I was wrong.
Yeah, I was hella wrong. I was sure it was going to be Jen. But it made so much sense why we never saw Amberson even fire back. All we saw was Detective Bryant and Jen firing back at Henrietta and her cousin, and we saw that Henrietta's cousin ended up getting hit by one of the bullets. I'm not sure if it was from Brian's gun or if it was from Detective Jen, but we do know that he ends up getting hit. Back in Atlanta, we see Stax pulls up with the MKs and their whole crew, and they are sliding through to take out Remy Ransom's crew along with BMF. And Glock says, cut off all heads. Everybody must go. They come. Everybody in his whole crew, with the exception of Stax, got a chop. I was like, yeah, y'all are done. I was like, ain't no way.
They chopping down the whole project.
Whole joint. Now, the joint, before we move on, because I'm going to get more into it. Matter of fact, no, I'm going to get to it when we get to that part. So, everybody, they taking out BMF. They taking out Remy Ransom's crew left and right with the choppers. This joint right here, I was like, damn, Glock is just ruthless. Glock lets off a chopper. He lets off a chopper.
I knew that was going to happen.
Milton.
I'm going to tell you why this was going to happen. I was telling the wife, I was like, once they put Milton in the beginning, when it was talking like, you know, previously on BMF, and they showed him, I was like, something's going to happen to that little boy. Because why bring him back up?
That's true. I didn't even think of it that way. But when Milton came through, back up. And Milton came through, slid through with an Uzi. I was like, yo, what the hell? Cuz get an Uzi from? Like, he got a whole chain gun. Uzi jumped out there.
He said he got it from one of the homies.
I was still thinking in my head, I'm thinking of my joint. I'm like, yo, why y'all ain't grabbed? I'm like, yo, Remy, grab that boy quick. Like, yo, get down, bro. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, these is AKs just going off left and right. And like, you just standing up. But I was like, yo, I was shocked to see that. I was like, yeah. I was like, Glock writing on the wall. He taking out little kids. I was like, yeah, he ruthless. I was like, it's a wrap. I was like, it's a wrap for him. And we see Milton Pops comes through. And, you know, he's heartbroken. He's like, you know, you said you was going to protect the hood. We trusted you. And look what happened. Now my son is unalive. And we saw from Meek's face, he was even shocked. Like, dang. Like, Glock just came through. And he out here unaliving little kids.
Everybody.
The part that I don't get with this whole shootout, and I think I'm just basing it off of real life, is one, Meech and them already knew off jump, like, yo, Glock and them got high grade military weapons, quote unquote, got AKs, got the choppers. So you're going to Remy Ransom's spot, you're going to where his hood at to try to quote unquote team up. Y'all know it's still bad blood. The part that gets me is, you know it's still bad blood, and nobody in your entire crew thought to, yo, let me try to get some type of high power like strap. Everybody in BMF got Berettas, they got pistols. Meanwhile, Remy Ransom crew, everybody out that joint got some type of machine gun, whether it's a Tech 9, it's a Uzi.
Yeah, some type of automatic.
V61. Everybody out that joint got some type of an SMG. And y'all got these little Beretta pistols that nobody in BMF thought, like, yo, just in case, yo, let's get a bulletproof vest. Because you knew, this is just as a precaution. Like, yo, it might have went down that where it was like, yo, if we go to Techwood, it don't work with Remy Ransom, they might try to take us out while we there.
I think this is a scene where, this is an episode where Big Meech's talents kind of let him down. His talents was always the gift of gab. And you thought you were allowed to get the gab by even going into Techwood and having this conversation. If anything, you should have had a conversation somewhere else, you know, maybe at Pure Platinum, you know, with just you and Remy Ransom instead of having you and the whole crew. This is where, you know, this talent's letting them down.
Yeah, I was just like, yo, like, I was just sitting there and it just hit me. And I was just like, yo, like, nobody even thought. And then I was just like, to see, which we knew, Rick ends up getting hit, trying to run off, because I was just like, I didn't understand why nobody just didn't stay where they was at. Because I was just like, Duffy finally came. He was finally the smart and logical one, because nobody was aiming. Y'all was just shooting. And Duffy was like, yo, we got to make these drums count.
Because they got banana clips.
Yeah. And I was just sitting there, and in my head, I was like, yo, why y'all don't wait? I was like, just let them shoot or let them get close. Then y'all can knock them off the map. I'm like, y'all just shoot. And I was like, no, none of y'all got extra clips because none of y'all are reloading. And like I said, we see Rip get hit, which we already knew his writing was on the wall. He ends up getting unalive. And this is when T becomes Superman and goes run and grabs it. He go grab the chopper and he starts to shoot back at the MKs and whatnot to protect Meech from getting taken out while he's trying to grab Rip's body to hide behind the car. And during that time, we see Hoop and Sturro and the rest of Detroit's BMF crew come up with some aid. And they got some type of high power straps. They got, you know, SMGs. They got Uzis and all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They like, come on. My whole thing I'm still trying to figure out is, one, who called them? And two, how they know to come
in? That was my thing. Who called them? And, I need to know. And, who called them?
Yes. And how they know to come to Techwood?
So I gave it an 8.
Because I was just like, and it kind of seemed like once they got back to Meech's crib, it kind of seemed like there was a hint that Meech was the one that called them. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking in my head, I was just like, still, that still doesn't explain how they ended up showing up at Techwood. How they even know to get to Techwood, and how they know all of that was going to go down at Techwood. Like, but the whole BMF Detroit, they come through. And they provide some aid for Meech and all them so that they can get up out of there and whatnot. Glock sees all his peoples getting taken down and whatnot, and because he's, which we all knew it was a setup anyways, because even if they probably would have took out Meech and T, he probably still would have took out Stax, but he even got mad because Stax didn't live up to his end of the bargain. So he ends up taking out Stax, Alonzo style, like training day. Up there in Techwood with the.
It was even worse.
So back here in Detroit, we got Lucille, and she is laying in bed, and she's thinking about Dr. Maurice. She's thinking of his card and everything.
She was doing more than thinking.
This scene right here, another scene, didn't understand. So Charles, he comes up in the room. And she like, yo, what you doing in here, whatnot? And I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, yo, you just gave this man some earlier in the day. So all of a sudden now, you gave him some, but I'm like, yeah, he still got to sleep in Terry's old room? I was lost. And then that man, yo, when she was just like, you acting like a little child. He was, because as soon as she said, okay, 15 minutes. That man hopped up so quick. It was cheesing from ear to ear like a little kid. And I was just like, God damn, dog.
My man, raw dog, Charles was in there.
Charles was ready. He jumped up so quick. Was like, 15 minutes. That's all I need. I just need one more time. And I was just like, I was like, yo, this thing was hilarious. But I was just like, I just don't understand. I'm like, you want to send that man back into Terry's room? And y'all went through this whole thing earlier. You broke them all, some you folded, broke them all. Some. So I was like, what's the point of him even being back in Terry's room? But so of course we get to the somberness and the rough part of the episode where at Jen's crib, Detective Brian gets a page, which we know is from the Juvenile Detention Center. And he comes up to the Juvenile Detention Center and he finds out that his son Kevin unalived himself and whatnot. And during that time, I guess the doctor in the infirmary gives him a note, and the note, you know, he basically leaves his note behind him saying, you know, like, you're always, you know, here, but, you know, I'm just not you. You know, I'm not as strong as you, and he couldn't take
another. That note was sad as hell.
Yeah, bro. Like I was good when he first showed it, like on the other side of the drawer. So I was like, oh, okay. I was like, dang. I was still messed up. Then he turned around. I was like, God
dang. Yeah. I know what's sad. Like, hell, bro.
I had to be like, in the episode like this, I was like,
yeah.
Like, episode, I'm like, I would have been good if y'all would have just ended it with the, you know, with Glock taking out Stacks. Mm-hmm. Y'all would have been that way, but I was like, y'all done bought this whole joint down. I was like, damn, dog. I was like,
yeah, it was messing with my mental.
I don't even know if I want to see the rest of the episode.
Man, it was definitely heartbreaking. It's a show. It was heartbreaking.
Yeah, I'm more so glad that they didn't show it. That was one thing I was glad that they did not show it. So, because we seen that in Raising Kanan, you know, with Luke. So I was glad that they definitely didn't show it on this episode. So, but we back here at Meech's crib, and everybody is mourning the loss of Rip, you know, and we said, you know, we're gonna make sure that, you know, Rip name gets out there so everybody know who he was and what was going on with his music and whatnot. And here is where Hoop and Sterl, you know, they tell Meech, you know, we got you anytime you need us. And this is where I think they said or even hinted to, like, you know, Meech was the one who called them to come down to go to war or whatnot, but it, like I said, we still don't know how they even know to go to Techwood and whatnot. And T tells Meech, you know, like, hey, man, let's just pack your bags. Let's go head back up on to Detroit. And Meech says, I'm like, nah, I'm not going. You know what I'm saying? It's my family down here. You know what I'm saying? Like, loyalty is, what do you say? It's not a word. It's also a lifestyle. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, this is my crew down here. This is my family. I'm not going home with my tail tucked between my legs. So I'm staying down here and I'm going to handle things, and you're going to go back up to Detroit and, you know, you're going to handle things. And I think it was more so T wasn't necessarily thinking about, I mean, he was worried about his safety, but I think it was also because, like he said in the narration, the whole, you know, ranking thing and how he was going to handle that, you know, he's always been the enforcer. So, you know, he was going to count on Meech, like, he going to come back home. You know, this really ain't his crew. We going to stop the Atlanta talks. And, like, you know, he going to come back home and handle that. But tells him he going to stay. And, you know, that's what it is. So Meech is going to stay in Atlanta. And T is going to go back to Detroit. So on the next episode, during the trailer, we see T at a funeral. Now, I got two kind of theories. I'm thinking this is more so Diesel's funeral.
I think it's Diesel.
That this is Diesel's funeral, but it also possibly could be another person's funeral, and I'll get to that near the end, but I'm thinking this is T here at Diesel's funeral. And here we got Remy Ransom and Claude Day, which looks like Remy Ransom is giving a eulogy for Milton, which was the little boy who got unalive at Techwood and whatnot. And we see Meech show up to the funeral, and I'm like 99% sure this is Meech showing up to little Milton's funeral. Little Milton's funeral. Just because of, like, the flowers and everything that's in the background. Plus, he said he wasn't going home to Detroit anyway. He was standing in line. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking here, he goes to Lil Milton's funeral. I'm sorry, y'all. I've been watching X-Men lately, so that's probably why that stuck in my head. And probably he's probably going to try to talk to Remy Ransom again and whatnot. And, you know, like I said, here again, he got in that same outfit here at the dinner with the whole BMF crew at his crib and everything. So that further lets me know, you know, he went to Lil Milton's funeral. And then here we got Henrietta Rankine, which is, she wild, and she's licking a whole flamethrower right here. Now, here is where I got the second theory of possibly that T went to somebody else's funeral, because in this scene right here, she says BMF, and then she set someone on fire, but we don't know who it is. So I'm thinking it's possibly somebody from BMF.
Possibly.
Because she says, BMF, and then although you can't see the person in the fire, but if you watch the trailer, you'll see that, you know what I'm saying? Like, she ends up setting someone on fire. Now, the question is who it is. I don't know, but it could quite possibly be that somebody is someone from BMF. And that is pretty much it. So, y'all, please be sure to like as well as subscribe to the channel. Also, turn on notifications as we drop videos on BMF as well as other things. Also, be on the lookout, as usual, we always bring you guys on Monday our exclusive picks and predictions for the latest episode of BMF. And also, just, you know, drop down in the comments and let us know your predictions for next week, as well as what y'all thought on episode 5 of BMF. So until next week, we will see y'all next time.